the Flicks of Doom, the official movie podcast of Geeks of Doom. I'm Empress Eve, and here with me, as always, is my little sugar corn pop with the big yellow taste, Justin Vactor.
Yeah.
This episode should be a real treat for our listeners, Justin. You know why?
Why?
Well, do you remember that episode of Friends where Jennifer Aniston's then-husband Brad Pitt came on the show as a guest? You remember that?
Well, I've seen sporadic episodes in syndication, so I don't think that was one of the Friends episodes that I've seen, but I do understand the reference that you're making.
That's right, because we have someone very special joining us today. He is my partner, Geeks of Doom, and in life, my hubby, Geeks of Doom's own Dave 3.
What's up, people?
That's him. That was my man right there. My man. Anyway, as always, we'll be bringing you the latest movie news and box office results. And this week, we'll be delving into the mind of M. Night Shyamalan with our review of his new film, Devil. And we'll also be taking a look at his filmmaking career. Justin, why don't you tell our listeners how to get in touch with us?
Well, everything is always with an X if you're thinking about Flicks of Doom. We have a Twitter page, which is twitter.com/flicksofdoom. You can email us your thoughts and opinions, or if you want to hear us talk about something, flicksofdoom@gmail.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us in iTunes if you're not, and leave us a review there. It always helps us. We got a review from our own MK2Face, so that was nice. And we need some more reviews, so please do that over in iTunes. And you can always check us out, geeksofdoom.com, where you can hear about movies, television, comic books, video games, everything in the world of the geek.
So, Justin, why don't you tell us what was in the news this week?
This week, we found out that my favorite Borat and yours, Sacha Baron Cohen, is going to be playing Queen lead singer Freddie Mercury in some type of film adaptation.
That's a pretty interesting choice. I think he's got the look, right? He already almost had the look of Freddie Mercury.
Well, if you're going off of that Borat picture, yeah, that we posted there, but if you look at him in real life, I don't think so.
No, yeah. But I think he could pull off the look for sure. And I don't know. So far, we don't know if he's going to be providing the vocals or if they're going to be able to use Queen's music and vocal, you know, Freddie Mercury's voice.
Now, what do you think about that? Movies that use the star's real voice, like Joaquin Phoenix, I remember in Walk the Line, or in movies where they put the actual person's voice over. I remember that Elvis, there was an Elvis movie, and now the guy that's on The Tudors, I forgot his name, but anyways, he lip-synced Elvis's voice. So what do you think about that?
I guess it depends. Like when they did the Runaways movie, they had Dakota Fanning and do their own vocals, and I thought it came out really well because they sounded very similar. That's right. So they sounded very similar. So they pulled it off, and so I thought in that case it was good. But I guess, you know, you always want it to be the original vocals, but I don't know. Doesn't always it. You don't want it to seem like a lip sync either. So
I think that when Val Kilmer did it in The Doors, it was really good because it kind of made him embody the performance better. You know.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think he definitely can pull off the stage performance as far as, like, you know, acting like Freddie Mercury. I think on stage at least he could definitely do it.
Yeah, I have complete confidence in him. Every role I've ever seen Sacha Baron Cohen in has always been great. Actually, he did do some singing in that Sweeney Todd musical. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, so if he does provide the vocals for the film, I think he could pull that off too because he's already proven that he has a really good range and he could sing. And Freddie Mercury was a great singer.
Yeah. A little too wimpy for my taste, Eve, but that's just me.
It's no Owl City.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this should be an interesting picture. I'm actually looking forward to it. I wonder how it's going to be. It says here that they're going to use, like, it's going to be the whole band. It's not just Freddie Mercury. And that it's going to be basically their when they were at their height, I think. And then leading up to their Live Aid performance, which was, I know, Justin, you were just a baby at the time, but that was a big deal back then. They totally blew everybody away. They were the best one at Live Aid, in my opinion. And I think that's what everyone thought, too.
If it wasn't We Are the World, then I didn't care about it.
Okay. To hell with everyone else.
Yeah.
All right. So what else is in the news this week?
Remember that James Cameron movie, True Lies, with Arnold and Jamie Lee Curtis and a young, I think, Eliza Dushku?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did you think about that movie, Eve?
We just watched it. Yeah.
Oh.
We just watched it.
To be on TV and we left it on, you know?
Yep. That was a good movie. I mean, good in you know, an action Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Well, we found out this week that ABC is getting a television series based on that film, True Lies.
How are they going to do that?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. How's that going to happen?
I don't know. How are they going to have...
They don't have any information on what it's actually going to be about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it just going to be another spy TV series where, you know, each week, you know, it could be that, you know how at the spoilers for the end of True Lies, at the end, both Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis become like they're a spy couple, right? So perhaps the TV show is going to be about them, like their characters going on spy adventures each week, because I mean the basic premise of the movie is that she doesn't know he's a spoiler. She doesn't know he's a spy, so you know they can't do that every week. Or maybe they could. Maybe every week the male character will go on a spy adventure and lie to his wife. I don't know. But is there enough spy TV shows? I don't know. There seems to be, right? They have a TV show now, J.J. Abrams' TV show called Undercovers, mm-hmm. and it's about a couple and they're spies, right? Yeah. So this sounds like it could be more of that. I don't know.
And I have to think they'll do it like the Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, taking the idea of a film and turning it into a TV series where you have every week coming back, and then over multiple seasons, story arcs that progress and evolve. So I guess that's how they're going to do this. I don't know. It doesn't seem like a very good idea to me, just from the premise of it. But you never know. They could be a good show.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, what's our last news story of the week?
Johnny Depp, Angelina Jolie are going to be in a movie called The Tourist. We have the theatrical trailer for all of our lovely readers.
So did you watch the trailer, Justin?
I have not watched the trailer. I have a certain policy with trailers where I try not to engross myself in any material from the movie before I actually view the movie, because I don't want to know. I don't want any scenes. I don't want anything spoiled for me. I want to go into it knowing absolutely nothing, and I think that's a better movie experience.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same way.
Yeah.
I avoid every trailer possible. I don't read anything about movies unless I have to, you know, for the site or for whatever reason. But I don't want to know unless it's a movie I don't care about at all, like, you know, some popcorn movie. Not really gonna, you know, nothing's gonna be spoiled by the fact that somebody tells me, you know, what this joke is or whatever. But
yeah.
Most of the times, I don't want to know a thing because I don't want people to forecast my beats. You know, I don't want to see the scenes before I see the scenes and already know how that one's going to end because I saw the ending in the trailer.
Yes. Yeah.
So has this whole news segment been one big spoiler for you?
No. Now, if it's a movie that I know absolutely nothing about, I'd never heard of it, then if I'm in the theater, I'll watch the trailer. I'll be like, oh, okay, now I know something about this movie. But
right.
If I know who's in it, if I know anything about it, that's all I need to know. Just give me one tagline from it. That's all
right.
I need.
So neither of you watched this trailer then? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I watched it, and I can tell you right now, I don't have to tell you anything about the movie to tell you that my opinion from the trailer is that they took two major movie stars, Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie, and they put them together in some kind of like adventure scenario where it seems like it might be. There's not really much about this movie that, like, I don't really know much about it. All I know is like Johnny Depp is the tourist, I think, and he meets Angelina Jolie, and it looks like, you know, wacky stuff happens. People are after them, you know, that kind of thing. And it reminds me of what they try to do with The Mexican, where they put Brad Pitt with Julia Roberts, and those two had zero chemistry. And that's what I saw from this trailer. I felt like zero chemistry. Not only that, it's the first time I think I've ever seen Johnny Depp look terrible in a movie. I don't know. He did not look good in this at
all. What, like physically ill? What do you mean?
Like, unattractive. That's what I mean. He does not look attractive in this film. And I don't think he's supposed to be unattractive. So I really didn't understand. He just didn't look right. So I don't know how this one will do. Maybe they'll fall in love and run away together, because you know how Angelina Jolie falls in love with all her.
I was going to say, this movie, if nothing else, this movie sounds like a reason for them to start dating in real life.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're too old.
Too old.
Too old.
I don't know about that. But is this something you guys would want to see? Do you want to see these big name actors together in an action kind of movie?
Sure.
Yeah, you don't mind?
I like both of them, Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie. I'll give it a chance.
I like both of them too, actually. So, I'm interested. But like I said, from this trailer, it didn't do anything for me as far as their chemistry, which I hope that's not true in the end. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's news. There was plenty more where that came from on geeksofdoom.com, so you can get all those stories there and more. So,
quite a rebound from last week's dismal box office eve. We have The Town coming in first at 23.8 million. Easy A opening in at strong number two at 18.2 million. The movie we're going to be reviewing this week, Devil, came in third at 12.5 million. And the only other wide release, Alpha and Omega, came in fifth with 9.2 million.
So I don't think it was surprising that The Town, which was directed by Ben Affleck and starring him as well, it came in first, and pretty much by a long shot, right?
Yeah.
Are we surprised by this?
23 million apparently already surpassed Gone Baby Gone, his first directorial debut in 2007, which that opened with 5.5 million its first weekend, and it made a total of 20 million by the end of its run. So it's already surpassed his first one in just 3 days.
That's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm surprised about? Easy A. I'm surprised that that came in second.
You didn't think it was going to do too well?
Well, truthfully, it wasn't really even on my radar until the last 2 weeks. And then,
but you knew
also,
Amanda Bynes was in it, right?
I didn't know that, but you had to tell me.
That's why. All right.
You had to tell me your girlfriend Amanda Bynes.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
And listen to this. The budget for Easy A was only $8 million. So they've already surpassed their budget, and they've already doubled their budget at $18.2 million.
Yeah, all right.
That means we're going to be seeing Easy B soon.
Yeah! Yeah, and he'll star Justin Bieber. Yeah!
Oh no.
Yeah. No, thank you. I thought Devil was going to do a little better.
Yeah, actually. That's what I was wondering. And it opened on 2,800 screens, so it would open pretty good, but I guess it just didn't do very as good as something like The Last Exorcism, which made $20 million its first weekend. It actually is a lot closer to a movie that came out in 2008, The Eye.
Oh, right, okay. Right. I don't know anything about that movie except the poster. I remember the poster was pretty disturbing, but that's all I knew about it.
I think it's a remake of a Korean horror film.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one opened at $12 million, and then it ended up making $31 million. So that's what it seems like Devil's on pace to do.
So I got to be honest
with you. I think that Devil was hurt by the associations with M. Night Shyamalan. Mm. I think that more people might have gone out to see it, and it might have gotten the Last Exorcism money if M. Night was kept quieter. And that was like a twist secret, like he had something to do with it. We found out later.
Yeah, I wonder why they chose... Well, all of his movies, I always wonder why they choose to market his name. Because I was actually, when I was doing some research for this episode in particular, I was looking at all the trailers for his movies. And one of the movies, he said he didn't want them to put from the director of The Sixth Sense on it. Because he didn't want anyone to associate with his previous work or say that, okay, this movie, I think it was for Signs. He didn't want them to say, okay, this is going to be like The Sixth Sense, or this is going to be, you know, previously like something he previously did. But then I was thinking about, well, isn't that the exact same thing if you put his name on it from M. Night Shyamalan? People already have an expectation for what the movie's going to be and what he's done previously. So I would say
definitely
don't even put his name on it at all, or any of his movies.
Well, we'll talk more about that in our discussion of M. Night and his mind.
Well, your favorite movie of the year, Resident Evil 3D, did still come in ahead of Alpha and Omega. It's
not sure why it's my favorite movie of the year, but well, okay.
It made a nice $5 million and came in with its total now is $44 million. So it's doing pretty well.
All right. Well, we'll see how Devil does next week. I don't think it's what is it up against? It's up against...
Legends of the Guardians, the Owls of Ga'Hoole. Mm-hmm. You Again, with Jamie Lee Curtis, Betty White, and a bunch of other girls. And Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps.
Mm. Oh, boy.
It's getting buried, isn't it? It's going to get buried next week. They're going to forget about it, and that'll be the end of Devil.
Probably, because that Owls of Ga'Hoole is a book series that people are going to come out and see. And then Wall Street is... a sequel. I don't know how many Wall Street fans there are out there. And then you have the romantic comedy crowd of You Again. So I don't think Devil is going to rise in the box office totals next week.
Oh, well. What could you do?
Yep.
Well, that brings us to our geek movie of the week, with Devil from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
That was not very enthusiastic. Yeah, Justin. Yeah.
The Devil has stumped us.
Well, you know, Justin, Eve, Devil is the first in the new Night Chronicles that they're doing, which is the basic idea.
Yeah, explain that to me, because I don't really know what this is.
It's the supernatural within modern urban society, and each movie he's going to do, he's providing the story, but then he's giving the script and the directorial responsibilities to other people. So he's coming up with the idea, but he's letting other people flesh it out. Okay. Which I think there needs to be a George Lucas Chronicles. How about that?
I agree.
The Lucas Chronicles.
So we don't know how many there will be.
Right? Yeah. I don't know if it's three. Mm-hmm. I think it's three. I'm looking at... I'm trying to find some information on this, and I'm seeing the Night Chronicles trilogy, so I'm not sure if that's 100% correct or not. But
okay.
We also heard that the third movie in the Night Chronicles is supposed to be what was originally the idea for the Unbreakable sequel.
Oh.
So instead of being a sequel, it's just going to be in this Night Chronicles series.
Well, this movie was only, what, 70 minutes? No, or...
I heard 80 minutes.
80 minutes?
But then now I'm looking at Wikipedia and I see 90 minutes. So I don't know what the actual running time is.
It definitely wasn't 90 minutes. I think when I went to look up the movie times, it said an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think it is 80 minutes.
Yeah.
But
and it felt like 80 minutes too.
Yeah. And if you're not familiar, the basic concept or premise is there's five people, five strangers trapped in an elevator, and one of them is the devil.
Right, so you basically spend the whole movie going, who's the devil? Which one could be the devil? And that pretty much distracts you from the rest of the movie, because you're sitting there analyzing everyone's moves and what they're doing, and you go, oh, he could be the devil. No, she could be the devil. No, no, no. And then people were saying, you know, all these whacked out ideas online of who and what the devil could be. But that's what, right, Dave? We were doing that in the theater. We just kept going, what do you think? This one's the devil? That one's the devil?
Sure. I mean, that's the whole movie.
Yeah. It should be Choose Your Own Devil Adventure. That's what it should be. You pick who the devil should be.
They could give us an interactive keypad where we could input our choice, and then whichever one gets the most votes, then that's the ending that you see.
Yeah, like those keypads they use for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yeah.
The audience gets those keypads? Right, exactly. Who do you want to be the devil? Well, I really like this movie, actually. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was slow anywhere. I think it was really well-paced, and there was a lot of little twists happening here and there that, you know, would make you, of course, doubt everything you thought from the beginning. And I liked who's the actor that plays the lead detective? I like him. He was good.
Yeah, Chris Messina is his name.
He was good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, it did. You could tell M. Night. You could tell his touch on it, right? But it definitely didn't feel like an M. Night Shyamalan movie, though. It didn't have that pacing that he normally uses, and it didn't have that, first of all, he wasn't in it, so you know it's not his movie if he's not in it, right? And then second of all, normally they always have that one character who, like, will just talk about, they kind of had that in this movie where they had the security guard where he just so happened to know, like, the legend of devil, of this particular devil, right?
Yeah.
So I guess they had that.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people, that was their least favorite part, was that guy's narration over.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt that was kind of ran down your throat.
Yeah. This director, John, I'm not sure how to say his last name, Dowdle. He also did Quarantine from 2 years ago. I don't know if you guys saw that one.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that was all right.
So this is.
I thought the directing was done well.
Yeah.
I mean, especially since, he had to deal with this elevator with five people in it and all these things happening in this elevator. So I thought it was done pretty well. I definitely don't want to get in the elevator tomorrow morning at work. That's for sure. I have to. I work in a high-rise building with an elevator that looks exactly like the elevator in this movie. And, I don't really want to get in it tomorrow.
Yeah,
I thought it was done well. I mean, it's pretty hard to make, a 6x6 box filled with five people seem like a very alive, set.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a really good job of keeping it moving. I mean, obviously, we cut to a lot of other things happening in the building and around the area in Philadelphia, but the scenes that were in the elevator itself didn't feel stagnant. They felt really well paced to me. I mean, I thought the movie was done well. My overall opinion that I felt right away after the movie was over was that it didn't necessarily need to be in the theater. It could have easily been an episode of Masters of Horror or another Showtime or Cinemax kind of movie, but it was good, though. I didn't feel like I wasted my money going to see it.
Yeah, that's the exact same way that I felt. When I came out of it, I thought it was okay. It was a nice time at the theater, but I wouldn't necessarily tell people, run out to see it now. You can wait for DVD to rent it.
Although you did not have the same experience that Dave and I had at the theater. You said when you went, it was just you and your friends, right?
Yeah,
and the rest of the theater was empty?
Yeah, we went early in the morning just to get the $5 price before noon.
Okay.
So.
Well, Dave and I went, it was I think about 4 o'clock on a Saturday, and the theater wasn't packed like it normally is on a Saturday, let's say late afternoon, but it wasn't empty. There was plenty of people there all around us, and I think that made the experience much better because people were reacting. People were, like, shouting. People were laughing when you had they were, like, scared when you were supposed to be scared. So, like, there was this whole, like, you had that whole community feeling like everyone was experiencing the same thing together. And I think that made for a much better movie-going experience. And,
there was even crowds of rowdy kids in the theater too.
Yes,
at one point, I had to stand up and go, "Shut up!"
Yeah, he was like the "get off my lawn" guy, like "shut your mouths," That was fun. Do you think we should move into spoilers for this? Because I want to talk about things we're not supposed to reveal. So, you guys want to do spoilers?
Sure.
There's not a lot you can say without ruining.
Right. Exactly.
Movie. Other than you liked it, you didn't.
So, okay, spoilers for Devil. If you didn't see Devil, and you don't want to be spoiled, then skip to the next chapter, because this podcast is actually in chapters, so you can skip right over this and go to our next topic. So, yeah. Okay, so spoilers for Devil. Okay, who guessed who the Devil was? Who knew?
Well, I told you I only had one person in mind, and it turned out to be right. I wasn't solid on it though. Like I was solid on one thing in the movie, and that was that one of the people in the elevator was going to be, you know, the person who killed the cop's family in the past. I was solid on that, but I wasn't solid on who it was going to be. I had her in mind who it was. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Justin.
I had no idea. When it was going from person to person, every person, I thought there was a valid reason that they could have been the Devil. But then, yeah, when it came to the old lady, I wasn't surprised, but I wasn't, I didn't know it either.
Well, I had two guesses. One guess was the old lady. But the thing is, I felt like the old lady was the obvious choice, mm-hmm. and I felt like, oh, it can't be her, because it just seems so obvious, and like people for the last week or so have been making all these jokes online going like, the old lady's the Devil, like, you know, so it was like a big joke. So I was like, it can't be the old lady. It would just be too obvious. Okay, so I'm like, all right, if it's not the old lady, then I'm like, I thought it was the mattress salesman. Because he was the first person who died, and I thought, oh, it's going to be like Saw, where the person dies, and then, you know, like, you think they're dead, and they actually come back at the end. So, I was half right, because that's exactly what happened. She died second, and then at the end, she comes back, and is like, whoa, you know, like, I'm the Devil, you know, so... which was great. Let me tell you, when she rose up in the background... People were screaming in our theater. It was so awesome. People were just freaking out, like, oh, my God, you know. So that was pretty cool, man. And, you know, she was pretty scary. Devil was pretty freaking scary, I have to say. But, yeah, those are my two those are the two choices I had.
Yeah. Yeah, my theory was it was either going to be the old lady or it was going to be the Devil was just in the elevator like itself. But... That was thrown off when the Spanish security guard said that he takes human form or she takes human form, because then I was like, oh, well, the elevator is not really human.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, I thought it was – it did keep you guessing, though, I have to say. Like, you know, just when you were like – I found myself second guessing a lot. I'd go like, I, you know, like I said, I was really going with the mattress guy, but then as it went on, I was like, well, maybe not. Maybe it's this guy, maybe it's the girl, and maybe, you know, we had all these different ideas of what could happen. And you're thinking this as the cop is learning things about the people inside the elevator, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, we liked the part where they were breaking through the wall, though. That was pretty cool. Mm. And when the fire department came and they were breaking through the wall.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I liked was the little device that they did where every time somebody got killed, the lights would go out. And then when they came back on, somebody was dead. That was kind of a little neat little trick that they did there to keep the suspense going. And I had my hands on the seat, on the armrest, and I was clenching them tightly. I was like, yeah. So,
yeah, I was scared. I was definitely scared.
I'm looking. It actually had the same cinematographer, Tak Fujimoto, who was on The Sixth Sense and Signs.
Oh, okay. Which,
again, through my M. Night kind of marathon that I did this last week, he was on a lot of the special features. So seeing his face, I came to know him over the hours I spent.
Me too. I did my homework too this week. So, what do we say? We say people should just wait for the DVD for Devil?
That's what I would say. I enjoyed it, and it was a fun time, but I didn't think it was anything spectacular or anything to tell your friends, you have to go out and see this now.
See, my feeling was is that it just wasn't deep enough to be a feature film or something that, you know, enters the pantheon of my favorite horrors or anything like that. Yeah. Like, it doesn't get there. It's just really nice story, nice idea, well executed. Again, like if it was a pay cable movie or something like that, it would probably be something I'd say, hey, I just saw this on Cinemax the other day and it was awesome, you gotta check it out. But I definitely wouldn't tell somebody to go to the theater to see it if that's your only option. So I mean, DVD, you know, pay-per-view, whatever, sounds like that's probably the move.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. And I think, like, my reasoning for that is that I'm so used to, now we paid I think $12.50 each for our tickets, and I feel like $12.50 for an hour and 20 minutes of my time was not, like, I feel like I should have gotten more movie for $12.50. Like, I'm used to, you know, I mean, for that same money you got to see, like, you know, Fellowship of the Ring and, you know, movies like that. So I feel like for $12.50 I should be getting more movie. I should be getting more of my theater time, theater going experience.
You know, I didn't feel like it was an hour and 20 minutes, too. It felt like it was longer than it actually was. I don't know if that's a strength or a weakness, but I felt like, man, this is long. And then when I got out, I was like, oh, it was only an hour and 20 minutes.
You just were like, show me the devil. Yeah.
It was definitely worth $5 to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, you paid $5, yeah.
It definitely felt short to me because by the time the movie was over and we were leaving, I didn't have to go to the bathroom on the way out of the theater. That's usually how I know.
You didn't even get to finish your entire drink.
That's true. That's definitely very telling of the length of the movie. Mm-hmm. You like that, Justin?
Yeah.
All right, people, then wait for the DVD or wait for it to come on cable so you don't have to pay for it, or Netflix.
I think it was a good start to the Night Chronicles, and I'm interested to see what they're going to come up with next.
Oh, wait, so is that cop going to be in the next movie? Is it going to be like he's in every movie, or is there going to be something that ties the movies together?
I don't think so. From everything that I've heard, the next one, it's going to be called Reincarnate, and it's about a jury discussing a case dealing with the supernatural.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know. I don't think there's going to be anything tying them together.
Except for the mind of M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah.
And then, like we said, the third one is supposed to be the unplanned sequel to Unbreakable.
Okay. I wonder if they'll be able to get Bruce Willis for that. Yeah. That would be cool. I don't know. I'm excited about the Night Chronicles. I mean, even though I'm not recommending people, you know, spend their money to go see it in the theaters, I thought it was good, and again, if for whatever reason the Night Chronicles continue beyond 3, I hope they continue on Cinemax.
Yeah.
Showtime.
I would like to see them as a little box set. That might be nice, depending on how they turn out.
That would be cool. That would be cool. Mm-hmm. Well, that brings us to our discussion of the week, which is the films of M. Night Shyamalan.
Eve, before we started on this M. Night journey, what were your overall thoughts of Mr. Shyamalan?
Okay. Well, my initial thoughts from the beginning of seeing his movies, I was a fan of his, right? Then at some point I got soured, and I think, as we will be discussing, a lot of people have gotten soured by M. Night, and right before I did this movie marathon this week not all his movies, but most of his movies, I was like kind of done with him. I was like, you know, I'm done. I'm sick of the mind of M. Night Shyamalan, and I just don't want to be bothered with him anymore. I didn't think he had it in him anymore, and that was it. And then I did the movie marathon this week, and it just reminded me of how much I really, really enjoyed a lot of his films, not all of them, but I enjoyed a lot of them, and it made me, and I did this movie marathon before I went to go see Devil, and so I felt like going into Devil, I was positive. Like, I was like, you know what, I felt like it was going to be a good movie, and like, I thought that, you know, like, it didn't, like Dave said before, people are like, oh, you see from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan, you're like, oh, it's a big turnoff. And to me, it was just the opposite. I was like, you know what? I'm ready to go back into the mind of M. Night Shyamalan at this point, because I just remembered, like, how much his films, like, I enjoyed them. What about you? How'd you go into this?
Well, I hadn't seen... I was with him for most of his big releases, from The Sixth Sense up until Signs. I was with him. And then, for whatever reason, I never got around to seeing The Village or Lady in the Water. But then I saw The Happening on Blu-ray, and I saw The Last Airbender in the theater. So I was with him for most of his movies, and I wasn't a big fan of The Happening, and I was not a big fan of Last Airbender. So I had felt he had dropped off towards the most latter part of his career. And doing this rewatch, I had kind of the same experience as you, rediscovering those earlier movies of Shyamalan, and I'm a big fan of M. Night.
All right, Dave, what about you?
I love him. I've always thought he was great at telling a story. I love his pacing when he puts movies together. I don't really have a problem with a lot of what he's done. The only thing I can say is I didn't see The Last Airbender, so I can't speak as to how good or bad it was. I mean, I know a lot of people who've seen it, you included, Justin, who love the source material and really did not enjoy the movie. So I can say, you know, without me having seen it, that my opinion is it's probably not that good based on everybody else's. But everything else I've enjoyed, even up to and including The Happening, which I didn't think was horrible. I have a fairly decent view of that movie, but I think he's great. I mean, everything else besides The Happening is not as contentious. So I could take more movies from him anytime.
Yeah.
So now we mentioned already that people are turned off to M. Night Shyamalan, and that actually, when the trailer, Dave and I were at San Diego Comic-Con in July, and they do this thing where they, if you're in the big hall, they show like an hour's worth of trailers, just like any kind of movie. They don't, it's not genre specific. And one of the trailers that they showed was for Devil. Now, I forgot if it was the teaser trailer or the full trailer, but I recall that you really didn't know what it was at first, and then all of a sudden the words came up, from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan, and that's it. The audience just started burst out into laughter, going like, ah, you know, like just like poo-pooing it, you know? And it really was telling, because it was like, wow, like, this is what people are thinking of him now. Like, it's like, you don't, it used to be, oh, he had a great mind, and now you're just like, people are just have no confidence in him, I guess. So
yeah, after The Sixth Sense, I think he was on the cover of Time magazine, and they declared him the next Spielberg. So
really?
He had a lot of buzz.
So where do you guys think this turned around for him? Because I think, you know, people liked Unbreakable, perhaps not as much as The Sixth Sense, but I don't think people hated it, and people liked Signs, and I think even The Village did well, right? So when did people start thinking of him as a joke?
The Happening.
You think so?
Absolutely. Unquestionably, The Happening. Not only because it's, you know, it's a hard movie to take. The Happening, you know, I like it because I like cheesy horror. I love 70s, you know, movies. And that's what it reminded me of. It reminded me of like a, you know, just a, you know, a mid-level horror movie from the earlier times, you know, stuff that I watched when I was a kid. So, I mean, I was okay with it. Again, not a great movie, but fun, scary. You know, at certain points, even though, you know, you're being chased around by trees and wind or whatever as the, you know, the villain, it was still scary in certain points, you know. And I thought it was put together well, directed well. The acting may not have been the best. You know, I've seen Marky Mark do better. But it was a good movie. But I think that's the turning point in his career. I mean, right there. Because before that, everything else prior didn't have a bad reputation as a movie. That movie has a bad reputation.
Right.
People hear, I mean, honestly, I think a lot of it is based on just the name itself, because it's you know, such a silly name for what it is, you know, what the movie was. I mean, mm-hmm. it could have been named something either less relevant or more relevant to what was actually happening in the movie, and I think it might have done a little bit better. In kind of the same way that Devil is doing bad now because M. Night is associated with it. It's all just about the way people perceive a movie, and people looking, you know, looking to see something, and they look and they see something called The Happening. You know, they're not going to run out to see that.
Yeah, I was watching the Blu-ray special features right before we started recording for The Happening, and in other countries it was called, I can't remember, you know, which country, like in Italy it was called something different, in France it was called something
different.
The
Event or something?
One of them was The Incident, one of them was The Day the Earth Stopped or something. Like, they all had different names for it.
I think if it was called The Event, it would have done a lot better, to be honest with you.
Hmm.
I think it should have been called Killer Trees.
No.
Angry Wind.
No.
Angry Wind is a
Mighty
good
Wind, yeah.
There you go.
No. So,
yeah, go ahead.
It's interesting. How did The Lady in the Water do? Because I wasn't really paying attention to it when it came out. And that's the only one out of all of them. All of his movies, Lady in the Water is the only one that the revenue didn't surpass the budget.
I don't think it was very well received when it was released. I don't think so. Do you remember, Dave? I don't know.
No, it definitely wasn't well received at the time. You know, it wasn't big in the theaters. I don't think the box office initially was that great, and I definitely know that it kind of went away pretty quick.
Yeah.
Too. You know.
Yeah.
But I didn't think I thought it was good, and I didn't hear anybody saying, "Oh, that movie is horrible." So. Mm.
Well, it was, you know, the follow up to The Village, which I think, even though it did, I think it did well at the box office, it still had mixed reactions from audiences. So it was like, this was his follow-up to that, and in my opinion it didn't, you know, blow anything away. Like, it wasn't like, oh yeah, you know, that it wasn't like, it wasn't on the same level as Signs or Sixth Sense at all. It was a cute story. Like, Lady in the Water, it was based on a children's story he had written for his kids, and so I liked the premise, but the execution I don't think was done very well. So I don't think it really connected with audiences. So, you know, so he's coming off The Village, where people were kind of up in the air, and you have Lady in the Water that people didn't connect with and was just forgotten about, and then you have The Happening, which, you know, actually it made a lot of money, right?
Yeah,
it made a lot of money.
It made 163, according to Box Office Mojo, made 163 million worldwide.
I was going to say, most of that's got to be international, though, right?
It has to be.
Domestic, it made $64 million.
It's still more than doubled its budget.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know. How? That movie was terrible. I mean, I went in with an open mind because I didn't want to let what other people were saying, like, discourage me. And, you know, like, listen, I didn't even mind about the killer wind and tree. Like, that wasn't even the issue. Is that I hated the characters, and I was bored with the scenario. But I have to say I was scared. I was scared of the events that were going on, because there's like no way to fight it. So, like, I was scared shit about that. But as far as the people that you have to follow in the movie, I kind of was like, to hell with them. Why don't you just kill them off and bring in different characters? And, you know, maybe people we could actually like.
So, now, because, you know, I just watched this, and you had told me beforehand how you hated all of these actors. Was it the actors themselves, or was it their characters? Because you told me how much you hated John Leguizamo, and I didn't have a big problem with him in the movie.
Well, okay, John Leguizamo, I don't like him, and I dislike, if he's in a movie, I feel like he ruins it. So his character wasn't bad. It wasn't that, oh yeah, this character is so horrible, but his character was kind of creepy, I felt, and obviously an idiot if you're going to leave your child behind to go look for your wife. Like, you know, How do you not stay and protect your child? That made no sense to me. But I was happy because I was like, bye. Mm. See ya. Like, I was really happy. Like, he was leaving. So yeah. That was one. Zooey Deschanel, I actually like her. You know, I have no problem with her. I actually like her. And, you know, she always plays a character who's, like, quirky. You know, she's not like everybody else. She's offbeat. And I felt like that's why they cast her, because they were trying to make it seem like her character was someone who was unconventional and, you know, just not like everybody else. And I felt like it didn't fit in the movie at all, you know, to the point where, like, I was like, bitch, you know what? You know, I was just like, go be a quirky self somewhere else, okay? And so that's how I felt. And then, you know, Mark Wahlberg, you know, I feel like he cannot play a role like this. He was supposed to be a, you know, a nice guy. He was a science teacher. He's a do-gooder. And, you know, the whole movie, he talks like this through the whole movie. Okay, guys? Okay? Are we going to do this now? Okay, let's go this way. That's how he spoke through the whole movie. And I'm like, no. No, he needs to be punching somebody or running around with a gun in a movie. Like, he should not be the do-gooder, nice guy, science teacher. No. So, I mean, I wanted him to live, but I just felt like those characters didn't feel like M. Night characters, like normal, the characters that he normally writes. Like, the movie felt like an M. Night movie as far as atmosphere, but following those characters didn't feel like him. All the people dropping dead and killing themselves, that felt like him, but not the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I gotta disagree with you on John Leguizamo, because I like him. I've liked him as a stand-up comedian and throughout his career. And that choice that he had to make, I thought, was a difficult one. And he ended up making the right choice, because she if she had gone with him, she would have been dead. So it was the right...
No. I meant that he shouldn't have gone back, even with the kid. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, first of all, he shouldn't have left his child. And he also shouldn't have gone back. Like, he should have just go... He should have... His child's safety should have been his first priority.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I felt. Yeah. I mean, how could you leave your child behind? I mean, in a situation like that, imagine, what was she like, 9 years old or 8 years old or something? Imagine you're 8 years old and your one parent that you're with is like, I'm going to leave you with my friends now and go try to find, you know, and now, you know, like, wouldn't you be scared shit? You're 8 years old. So I don't think.
I think. Somewhere along the line, you lost me, because I said I think he made the right decision when he left her, because he had to make the decision, okay, do I want my child to have one parent or no parents? And at the same time, he was like, does he go after his wife or does he stay with his child? And if he had brought his, like I said, if he had brought his child with him, she would have died. So him kind of sacrificing himself almost, I thought, was the right choice. And that was the choice that allowed her to live, because she went off with his friends. And they talked about that in the special features, how they wanted to give him a great send-off, and he had this tough decision to make, and how he was... So it was very interesting to watch that special feature. And Mark Wahlberg, I kept laughing, because I kept imagining him in The Other Guys, and everything he said, I kept laughing in this movie. So the second time, this is the second time I watched it tonight. For some reason, I had a much better time the second time than I did the first time. Maybe I was taking it more seriously the first time, and then this time, there were things that he was doing where he was... Like, there was one scene where he's talking about he saw a girl in the drugstore, and he asked her for cough syrup or something like that. Like, I just started LOLing. Like, there was a bunch of times that he did that where I just lost it, and I just started laughing, so... I don't know. The second, but it is funny. He was in full Mark Wahlberg mode, as you were talking about. That's the exact same thing Andy Samberg does when he does his impression of him on.
Yeah, when
Saturday
he says, "Say hi to your mother for me," right?
Yeah.
Hey, goat. How you doing, goat? Hey, that's exactly how he was through this entire film.
It was weird. I liked it, like I said, a lot more the second time. I don't know. The first time I watched it, I hated it. And I noticed on Netflix, I gave it a 1 out of 5. But I was a lot more forgiving the second time I watched it.
Something I don't know, Dave. Dave, you actually liked it, you said, right?
I did. I thought it was scary for what it was. You know, I think it's just mismarketed. And like I said, some of the performances weren't that great, but it was all right. You know, I mean, it's definitely on the same level as like what Devil is. You know, it's just as scary as that movie and just as enjoyable for what it is as Devil. But I think even more substantial, though. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it was all right. I think it was just, yeah, again, like a bad choice in naming. Like, he came upon the name and he was like, yeah, I can understand where he's coming from, too. You know, he's being, M. Night Shyamalan is being daring. You know, he's saying, this is happening, man. It's happening. Can you believe? And you know, I'm sure he had a room full of people who were like, I don't like the happening. And he was like, but it's happening. Can you believe this is happening? And then at the end of the meeting, everybody was like, yeah, man, I can't believe this is happening. And they were like, well, just call it that. So whatever, you know. And, you know, it's not even like that was the first time there was ever a movie called The Happening. There was, you know, a 70s or late 60s, early 70s movie called The Happening, which was more like, a biker drug movie, though. But
yeah, you know. I was looking up, before this podcast, I was trying to look up Roger Ebert's review of The Happening, and I ended up clicking on that other one, and I was like, wait a minute, this isn't The Happening. But right. I'd like to see a special feature or some type of Mystery Science Theater where they do a count of how many times they say The Happening, in the movie, because I couldn't believe how many times.
I think it's four times, maybe, because, you know, when we were watching it the other day, when people were trying to describe what was taking place, they either said some event or they said something's happening, right? So I think they were tossing it up. I think at some point it was going to be called The Event 2, and they had both of those kind of put in the movie, because I remember every time they said The Happening, Eve would point at the screen and go, happening. You know, she would notate it. So I think it was said three or four times.
Yeah,
I did the same thing for The Event. Every time they said somebody said The Event, I pointed to the screen. I was like, they said The Event. See? So I think both were like even on 3-to-4 ratio, 3-to-4 mark there. So I think that they were probably seesawing between those two titles.
There was one time where Mark Wahlberg said it within a 30-second period. He said it 2 or 3 times. I was like, why are you saying it so many times? He was like, happening, happening, happening. But on the special features, M. Night talked about it was either going to be named The Green Effect, The Northeast Incident, or The Happening. And he took it to his Indian grandfather. I can't remember his. I think it was his grandfather, some relation to him. And he said, okay, I'm going to name it. Which do you think is better named, The Happening or The Northeast Incident? And his grandfather walked away, got something out of the refrigerator, got a drink, came back, and he said, you know, I like The Southwest Effect. And he goes, what? The Southwest Effect. No, I'm calling it The Happening. You can't even remember the name. So that was why he said that's why he chose The Happening. But
it's his senile old grandpa.
Yeah, he said.
Can't speak English.
He said, that's a tip to all you filmmakers. Make sure you run it by an old Indian man when you're choosing your title. So,
okay. Well, yeah, it worked so well.
Yeah. Did you know The Happening is the only movie that he does not appear in?
Yep.
Yeah, I know. Maybe that's it. Maybe he should have showed up at some point because
when I was he plays a voice on the phone. But you know, when I was watching it, I realized why Eve doesn't like the movie. It was like a light bulb above my head.
Okay, tell me.
Eve doesn't like the fact or the idea that plants or vegetation would strike back at her because she is a vegetarian. And therefore, it's like the vegetables on her plate are getting up and killing her. So Eve doesn't want to imagine that. That's why she didn't like The Happening.
That's a good theory. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I did think that. I was like, shit, now I got to worry about the plants.
Yeah.
I was like, I cut out everything else. I was like, now I have to worry about the plants. So,
I'm looking at my notes, and I wrote Eve didn't like it because she's a veggie. I didn't want to write the whole thing up, but yeah, that's it, Eve. That's the ticket.
Possible. Although, you know, I kind of liked. You see, I think that audiences had a problem with the fact that trees were striking back.
Yeah, I
like that idea.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Is there was number one. There's all those people that. Anytime there's a green message in a movie, a lot of people, like I remember in WALL-E, there was a big backlash. Oh, that's a green message. I don't like it. I think that's one thing. And then number two, one of the things that threw me off originally when I watched it, just the vision of them running away from the wind or from the trees looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
So that, like, the idea, like, if you were actually in that setting, yeah, that would be really scary. But you think about it translating onto film, it looks very strange. And then, well, here's another scene of comedy with Mark Wahlberg where he goes up and starts talking to the plant. And then he realized,
hey, plant, what are you, a plant?
Yeah, you motherfucker. You exactly.
But he realized that it was plastic. But that was, there was a lot of funny scenes I didn't remember when I watched it the first time. But yeah, but let's just say that that plant was real and he was walking up and talking to it. That, there was just a lot of ridiculous things in a movie that, like, it felt like a parody movie at times.
Right.
But yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, I think it had potential to be something really good, because I don't know about you, but those people jumping off the buildings.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whoa, that was scary. And, you know, there was a guy that laid down and got run over by the lawnmower.
Yeah.
Come on.
And just if you place yourself in that situation, if you were walking down the street and then construction workers just started walking off the 19th floor or whatever.
Right.
That would be pretty scary.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, but you're right. It was like translating the fact that the trees are blowing in the wind and that's the threat. Mm-hmm. It didn't come across. It didn't really come across at all. But, then, you know, kind of, and I felt this way about Signs, by the way, too, is that at the end, it just stops. Everything stops. And then when people are talking about it and they're like, what happened? Like, why did it stop? People are like, oh, but just, yep, stopped, you know, like, and like same thing in Signs where it was like, oh, you know, the water, you know,
oh.
You know, it was like that same thing where, you know, it's sort of like, that's how the movie ends. That's how the main characters survive, is that they luck out, basically.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have to run and jump over things jump off a building that's exploding or anything. You know, like, they didn't have to do anything. All they had to do was, like, wait it out.
Yeah.
Well, right?
I don't know. A lot of his endings are similar. I didn't really have a problem with that. And I actually had a bigger problem, if you're going off logic. These aliens, talking about Signs, I'm sure they knew that water was a weakness for them, right? So why would they come to a planet that's 3/4 water, and then these beings that are mostly made of water?
Water,
like that,
right.
That's their only... It would be like Superman going to a planet that's all kryptonite, or right. 3/4 kryptonite. Like,
yeah, I was seeing it as... Yeah, it's like as if we were invading a planet, you know, that is mostly made of hydrochloric acid or something like that. And the beings are also made of hydrochloric acid.
Yeah.
You don't think anyone, like, accidentally landed in the water and was like, whoa, you know, like they evaporated and, you know, they were like, don't go there.
Yeah.
Well, I guess where else are the aliens going to go?
Well, the only thing I could think of is just if the only way that it makes sense to me is if they didn't know that water was their weakness. That's the only thing that would make sense to me.
It's possible, because if they don't have water on their planet, mm-hmm. and they've never been to a planet that had water, then they wouldn't know.
Yeah, but...
Right? But it was very War of the Worlds, though, in that respect.
They weren't defeated by the water, though. I mean, ultimately, if you listen to the story, they chose to leave because they got enough of whatever they came for. I mean, they came for people, basically. So they were... needy, you know, probably desperate or whatever. I mean, none of that part is ever extrapolated. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, the ultimate thing is they came, they took a whole bunch of people with them, and then they took off. So it's like, it's really not even like we defeated them with the water. It's just a couple that came at a few people got beat up a little bit, but that's about it.
Got their ass kicked.
And which is the same thing with the happening. I mean, you just waited it out, but it's like it stopped, and then it started somewhere else anyway, you know, started in France or wherever. So it's like, it's not over. It's not anything. It's just like these aliens could come back next week and be like, hey, we got wetsuits and we're taking some more of you, you know, and that's the end of that. You know?
We have our scuba gear. We're ready.
Yeah. Signs was one of my favorites. I'm still going back and forth after watching them all over again. The Sixth Sense and Signs, I love both of those movies, and it's hard for me to say which one I like more, but the thing about Signs is, I think the alien stuff is very interesting. But I also think the movie for me is more about Mel Gibson's character and his kind of crisis of faith that he has, because that's his arc for the movie. Is he starts off, you know, with he's a former minister and he's like, don't call me that anymore. And there's no one looking out for us. You know, he tells that to Joaquin Phoenix's character. Right. And so his emotional arc over the movie, and then by the end, that's to me the most interesting part, even though, you know, I like the aliens and I feel like that's what is the most marketable thing. And that's what you put on the poster. And that's what most people look at. But I like the Mel Gibson,
I agree too. Like, I feel like this movie didn't need aliens. It didn't need a twist. It didn't need anything like that. All it needed was Mel Gibson and the trauma that he had been through and how he's going forward with his life and trying to raise his children. And, you know, it could have been anything that comes and threatens them. It could have been a storm comes and they have to survive a tornado or something like that. And, you know, or something.
It could have been the wind.
Yeah.
It could have been the wind. It could have been the trees.
Yeah.
Okay. The trees could have come. And actually, you know, if you would have put Mel Gibson and his kids and Joaquin Phoenix in The Happening, I would have totally been rooting for them. I would have been like, run, run. You know, I totally would have been rooting for them because I think all of those characters were really great in Signs. And, you know, like I said, I didn't even need it to be aliens. And actually, the very first time I saw the movie, I thought like, oh, maybe it won't be aliens. Like, maybe it'll be something else. Like, maybe it'll be some government hoax or whatever it is. But tell me that the best part of that movie isn't the South American birthday party?
Oh, yeah.
That was the best. Mm-hmm. That was the best. I crack up every time I see that.
Well, I remember, I have a strong memory of the first time that I saw that. And I was totally engrossed in the movie and thinking, how would I react if they showed on TV, okay, aliens are real. This is the first footage that we have of them. And Joaquin Phoenix's reaction in that scene was amazing. Like, that is how I would react. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was watching it for the first time, I remember getting like goosebumps. I was like, oh man. So there's the suspense in Signs and The Sixth Sense is amazing. Like, I can't believe that he's able to reach that level. That's just, I love that. And another thing I love about Signs is the way that all the characters are introduced. And then how you, like, it goes from Mel Gibson's character, he wakes up, and then Joaquin Phoenix's character wakes up, and then the kids. And then you don't find out about them until later in the movie when they go to the town for their last little trip out. And then they all split up, and through each story of their little split up, you get their backstory, and you know, you find out about, you know, each individual character. So I love that, the way that the storytelling is told in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
did you know Mark Ruffalo was originally going to play Joaquin Phoenix's character?
Oh, really? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think he had like another commitment or something. But you saw with Joaquin Phoenix being cast in Signs, that's what led to him being cast in The Village. So,
and he was great in The Village. He was amazing.
It's one of the roles him in Signs. Was what made me really respect him as an actor. Mm-hmm. I mean, the last time I remember liking him as an actor was when he was in, what was it, Space Camp, I think it was. he was still called Leaf Phoenix at the time, right?
I'm going to have to look that movie up. I've never seen that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I had dreams of that movie when I was a kid, man.
What is it, like, Space Camp?
Space Camp, yeah. So a bunch of kids go to space camp and they wind up accidentally getting shot into space and have to use their knowledge to get themselves back down again.
Leah Thompson is in this?
Yeah. See, this is straight up your alley, and this is one of those things that I'd be like, I can't believe Justin hasn't
seen. It's in my Netflix right now. 1986. I was 4 years old when this came out.
Yeah, I saw it in the theaters.
Yes.
I'm old like that. But yeah, anyway, I'm sorry to get sidetracked. But yeah, that's the last time I remember liking him, because I was his age. We're the same age, basically. So I was his age, and as I was seeing that movie, so I identified the most with him then. And like all through, you know, my life growing up, I was always watching his career and hoping he would do something really cool. And, you know, I mean, I loved it when he played Johnny Cash. I thought that was great. And seeing him in Signs for me was like, oh, he's really such – gets into the role so well that I think he's that guy. Like, I felt like he was Merrill. I really felt like he was that downtrodden guy who was like, you know what? No matter what anyone says, my heart says swing. You know, yeah. I might wind up being the guy with the most strikeouts ever, yeah. You know, in the minor leagues. But I'm also going to be the guy who gets the most home runs ever or the biggest home runs ever, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. So, and yeah, like, that was another thing that I loved as well, how there was no, like, even if you thought a bit of information was a throwaway line or wasted, like, everything came back, like that line right there and the water glasses being around the house, like all of that stuff, the asthma, everything right. coming back and playing an important role in the movie. I love that.
Yeah, I like that too. Definitely.
I'd be interested to get both of your opinions when you, or if you're interested, the Joaquin Phoenix documentary that's currently out, I'm Still Here.
Oh, I gotta see that. Yeah, I'm so interested to see that, to mm-hmm. be honest with you.
Which it turns out is a hoax. It was all fake.
Yeah.
Right?
Which I'm disappointed that they revealed that at the time that they did. I wish they would have waited maybe until the DVD or a little bit later, but I feel like half of the people who were interested are no longer interested because they were going to see it because it was real, or with the hopes that it was real, I should say.
I'm still going to go into it pretending to myself that it's real.
Yeah.
Because I can fool myself like yeah. that. It's all right.
You can fool yourself with that, but you can't watch a trailer.
No, it's not. You know what? I don't know anything about it, though. I know the concept. Mm. I haven't seen one scene from it. I mean, and I know just that much. I just the periphery. So, I mean, and the reason I don't watch trailers is because I don't want the beats to be given to me in the song of the movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't want to know what's around that corner because I saw Mel Gibson jump around the corner in the trailer and make a face. You know, yeah. I don't want any of that. That's really the reason. I don't want to ruin my experience of things being revealed to me naturally as the editor or the director wanted, you know. But I don't care, you know, if I know what a movie's about. Like, you could give me the synopsis of something without, mm-hmm. you know, giving away too much.
You know, yes. A lot of times I don't like it when they mismarket something. They'll cut the trailer oh, yeah. to be a totally different movie than what the movie turns out to be. And so your expectations going into a movie are totally off. And then that, a lot of people don't realize how powerful expectations are going into a movie. If you're expecting a comedy and you get a drama or something, it totally changes your perception of the movie. So that's another reason why I don't like to watch trailers a lot of the times.
Yeah, there are times in which the people who are cutting the trailers have absolutely no, you know, real feel for what the movie mm-hmm. is. You know, they're just taking a bunch of cool cut scenes yeah. or scenes that they're being provided. It might not even be, you know, they're just getting what they're given yeah. too. So they're not necessarily able to make a competent trailer that way. So yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. But it's marketing, you know, and unfortunately, it's the only way to get the word out. Yeah. So yeah. they have to do it. You know, it has to be done. But I don't want to take part in, like you said, I don't want to be misled into believing I'm seeing a different movie, and I don't want to be shown things. Like, I remember when I was a kid, and this is probably glorification, but I remember trailers being a lot less revealing when I was a kid in, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. So I really didn't know a lot. I mean, most of the time, trailers were one scene, maybe two, a couple of bits of music with black, and then they would show the name of the movie.
Yeah,
that's what I remember trailer being. So you really didn't know shit. You're like, if I was
you know
going
what?
To
see- I think that I think you're not remembering correctly. No, because you know why? It's like you ever go back and like you'll see the trailer for Jaws. You ever like look and see like I feel like if you look, they gave a lot away. It was.
Yeah, but those weren't necessarily shown in all theaters, and some of them were just shown on TV. You know, it's like they're yeah. shown in different scenarios, too.
I think things were paced very differently, too. Like, where the narrator, like, just talked a lot, and it's like, you're going to be scared. You know, like, it was like that. It wasn't like you got so much dialogue. It was like there was a voiceover guy who was, like, saying a bunch of things, like, oh, you've never seen this before. And
right,
you know,
and that guy wasn't in the movie. You know, that guy's
right,
not
exactly.
in the movie. You know, so
yeah,
you're not being
yeah.
ruined by hearing what the people are saying and stuff like that. Like, I remember the trailer for things like Friday the 13th and stuff like that where, you know, obviously that's a bad example because there's not too much of an arc to a movie like that, but where they didn't really reveal very much because there wasn't a lot that they could show. So, I mean, I prefer that.
One of my favorite trailers of all time was there was a teaser trailer for the first Back to the Future, and it was just Michael J. Fox walking up to a DeLorean, and then the announcer was just, you know, Marty McFly was never late, or he was never on time for blah, blah, blah. And then he puts his glasses on, and then he jumps in the DeLorean. That was like the whole trailer. I was like, yeah, that's what I want to see. Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's all I think you need, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. Now, what about the Sixth Sense trailer? Didn't in the Sixth Sense you saw the scene where Haley Joel Osment says, "I see dead people"?
Yeah, because I watched it on the – I rented it on Blu-ray, and I specifically watched the trailer afterwards. And, yeah, it does have that line in it.
And that's pretty much – that's a pretty big reveal in the film. But then again, that's one of the most popular lines in any film right yeah. now. So I guess it didn't hurt it, but probably, yeah. you know, that I think that was a pretty big reveal.
I was lucky. I got to see that movie – without knowing anything. I didn't even see a trailer before I saw that movie. So I was like, my mind was just completely blown apart. There was brains on the seat when I was leaving the theater. I was just like, oh my God. I didn't see it coming. I got to admit, I was completely oblivious. I had no idea the dude was dead all the way through the movie. And when it was revealed that, I was like, motherfucking genius.
Yeah.
Motherfucking genius.
Well, that's the problem now, though, because every film of his that you go to see, everyone is expecting a mind-blowing twist.
Well, you know, right? that's unrealistic.
But because he does give you a twist in every movie, he gives you
Well, that's not true. There's no twist. There's no twist in Signs. There's no twist in the Happening, you know? And there's really no twist in Devil, which he wrote. You know, it's not a twist. You know what's coming. You weren't like, oh my God, one of them is the devil. You know, you knew one of them was going to be the devil. So, what do you
think? But how did you know that, though?
Because we had the Spanish guy telling us at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, but I mean, like,
exactly how it was going to play out.
It's like, and then he knew everything.
He knew, at the end, there will be one left, and someone who loves him is going to be there to watch him. You know, she's telling us all.
I mean, like, are you going to take the Spanish guy serious because the toast landed jelly side down? knows everything about the devil.
You know what I thought, though, what it reminded me of was it reminded me of Lady in the Water again, because in both movies, there's some background periphery character who knows every single thing. Mm-hmm. In Lady in the Water, we got the old Asian woman who knows the entire story. She knows everything about Narfs, everything about Scrunts, everything about the Edelons, everything that's coming. She's telling the whole story from beginning to end. Same thing in Devil, we get the Spanish dude who's like, I know exactly what's happening right now. Everyone around him that tries to help is going to die. All the people in there deserve it. The devil is one of them. And then before the last one dies, somebody who loves is going to come and see him. And that's going to be the end of that, right? So I want to know where these stories are, because I don't get these stories. When I grew up,
yeah, nobody I don't have any of these stories.
Such complete arcs in that. And I mean, my stories were as, you know, general and broad as possible. You know, I mean, these are some real heavy folklore being passed along, you know, in the modern tenements of our day, you know.
Yeah.
And why would the devil go to the one building where there's a guy who happens to know the entire folklore of the devil?
Well, if you believe his narration, you remember he said there's a reason we're the audience for this, like that the devil specifically chose them to show them what was happening. So that was He specifically.
Well, I just gotta chill.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, and Eve, you are. There's a specific reason he chose you to watch that movie as well. So that was.
I'm scared shit now. All,
and when your toast goes jelly side down next morning,
I'm not. You better run out the window. Toast with jelly ever again in my life. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there was really a twist in Lady in the Water, either. I think you know what, but I think Eve has a point. Because of The Sixth Sense and maybe, I don't know, Unbreakable, maybe, I don't know.
There was a twist. There was definitely
a twist in Unbreakable. I almost said, no, there wasn't, but I'm like, you know what, that is a fucking twist, because I was, again, taken by surprise by him, because I want to be. I've changed my ways since then, but I used to sit in the theater and try not to see if I could figure out the ending, mm-hmm. because I wanted to be yeah. along for the ride, kind of, you know, like being on a roller coaster. You don't want to know all the turns on the roller coaster, because yeah. then it's not as fun. But yeah, in his later movies, because again of his marketing, that's how his movies are marketed. They're marketed like you're going to be surprised. M. Night Shyamalan is going to do it to you again, and here it comes. You ready? Here, twist. You know, but I think that it's really, you know, he's been painted into that corner. It's not his fault. And I think that's one of the main reasons that he did The Happening. And I think that's also one of the main reasons that he chose to direct Avatar, because he was like, you know what? I didn't even write that. And everyone knows Avatar from here. You know, if you're anyone, you know, into anime or in this day and age, you know what it is. So he's like, I'm going to take this property that has absolutely nothing to do with me. I'm not really going to put my signature on it, and I'm just going to make a movie. It's like, you know, it's like his cop out from Kevin Smith. Like, he's just going to a movie just to do it so he could have something that doesn't taste like him be part of his repertoire.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he didn't do a very good job, apparently, and it didn't work to his advantage. But that's the problem. I think that he's been painted to this corner to the point in which he can't really be creative in the way he wants to without people saying, but you know, Knight, you didn't put the twist on the end of this. What are you going to do here? You know, which I thought was funny when I saw The Village and the twist in The Village was revealed, I was let down. Because I didn't think it was that great of a twist, because that was one of the things where I actually kind of caught on to it and thought that what it could be. You know, it turns out that they're all actually not in, you know, the 1700s or 1800s, are actually in modern times, just enclosed in a, you know, a game reserve or something like that. I didn't think that was a great twist, because it really didn't, you know, seal the deal on the movie for me, you know, and I feel bad about it, because it's a great movie. It's actually, if he didn't make The Sixth Sense, that would be my favorite movie from him. But I can't ever, you know, at least up until this day, I can't ever say that there's a better movie that he's made than The Sixth Sense, because that's just a perfect movie.
Yeah. I don't think he will for the rest of his career. I don't think he will ever get back to the level of The Sixth Sense, which is strange, because he had such success early on in his career. He also did two films before that, but they're not really well known. The first one was Praying with Anger, which he did in 1992. And then the second movie was Wide Awake with Rosie O'Donnell. And that movie, it was made in 1995, but it wasn't released until 1998. And
which is right before The Sixth Sense came out, wasn't
it? Yeah. It had a $6 million budget, but it only made $1 million. So it was, both of those movies weren't that successful, but then The Sixth Sense was his third movie, and that, of course, it went on to break box office records and almost grossed $700 million. So and then it had 6 Academy Award nominations: Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, Best Editing, Best Supporting Actor. So
And it brought Bruce Willis back, you know. I mean, I don't know, he wasn't, you know, ever really kind of gone, but that was like Pulp Fiction for him, you know. Pulp Fiction kind of brought him in, but Pulp Fiction would really reinvigorated Travolta, where I think that The Sixth Sense really reinvigorated Bruce Willis, because then he went on to Unbreakable after that, and you know, he's still one of my favorites.
And I was thinking about it, is The Sixth Sense the last movie that he had hair in? Because
did he have hair in that movie?
In The Sixth, I don't know if it was like in The Sixth Sense, it looks like hair plugs, but in Unbreakable, then the next movie, he's shaved. He's got his head shaved. So I was wondering if The Sixth Sense.
I think he had the hair plugs in Sixth Sense.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I don't know. It was just kind of something I was wondering about. But
important stuff, you know.
Are either of you fans of the Scary Movie franchise?
Yeah.
Scary Movie, for you M. Night fans out there, it should be noted, Scary Movie 3 has a pretty good Signs parody in it, and I think Charlie Sheen plays the Mel Gibson role. And then Scary Movie 4 has a Village parody in it, and I think
I remember the third one, the Signs one. That was it. You know what's funny? While I was rewatching Signs, I kept thinking Cameron Mannheim was going to come out, and I kept going, "Why do I think she's in this movie?" Like, you know. And then I realized, "Oh wait." That was the parody. She played the sheriff, right?
And wasn't the Joaquin Phoenix role in that movie kind of mixed with 8 Mile or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
I thought that was pretty funny, actually.
When I went to go rent Lady in the Water and The Happening today, I ended up getting Scary Movie 3 and 4, because I forgot about those parodies, and so I wanted to rewatch them again. I haven't had a chance to, but I will definitely be
Oh, by the way, Justin, before I forget, did you see yourself in Lady in the Water?
I watched the entire movie, and Eve told me I was in it, but I don't know what she was talking about.
You don't notice yourself as the person who reads the cereal boxes? You didn't know that? How did you not know that was you? You're the little kid the interpreter?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Interesting fact about him. His name is Noah Gray Cabe, and he was on Heroes, and he was on My Wife and Kids, which was a show that I loved when it was on. That was the Damon Wayans show. Mm-hmm. And he reminds me, just him, not even that character in the Lady in the Water, which it does for the cereal part, because I'm a cereal fanatic, but he himself reminds me of myself, that I would watch, you know, home movies of myself as a little kid. Like, he kind of looks like me as a little kid, and he kind of acts like me as a little kid. So I've been going back, even back to 2002 when he was on My Wife and Kids. I've been following that actor. So it was funny that you said that, but you said that it would come near the end. And
well,
I was thinking,
the reveal that it was you comes at the end with the cereal. All and right. then I was just like, oh my God, that's Justin, like right there. Yeah. So I thought you would see the cereal sequence and be like, oh, there I am.
Well, yeah, like I said, I've seen myself and him going way back, and he plays piano, and when I was a kid, I used to play piano, so there's a number of different...
See, so you were in Lady in the Water.
Sure,
I was right.
Sure,
I was right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was in Space Camp.
Yeah! There's a couple of things about M. Night that are recurring themes in his movies, and there's something... He likes to use a lot of big-name actors. Almost pretty much every one of his movies, there's a huge star in the movie. He likes to use James Newton Howard to score every movie, and I think no matter what you say about M. Night's movies, I think consistently every score James Newton Howard has done has been good. So that's always, the music is always good. Like we talked about the twist endings, which I think they're kind of a hindrance to him now. Not only for us as an audience, because we're going in with a huge expectation of a Sixth Sense type twist, but then also I think to him creatively, where he has to say, okay, every movie has to have a twist. So I think it's become a burden to him to a certain extent.
Yeah.
The color.
I thought that was the biggest downfall in The Village, was the fact that he probably felt cornered into having to have a twist ending, even though, I mean, it's like, it's a big Twilight Zone episode already anyway. But I thought that because that's the case with him, that it would have been better if he would have faked the twist, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, this is how I wanted the movie to end. And now it's definitely one of my favorite movies from him. And even in of all movies, it's definitely probably in my top 50 of, one movies that I really love. I felt to me that the way it ended, we get the whole reveal of where they are. We get the fight between her and Adrian Brody in the suit, and she defeats him, the blind woman. And then she goes, gets the medicine, comes back, does the whole thing, gets the medicine back to the village. She, hopefully, saves her soon-to-be husband's life. And then the movie ends. Everyone lives, lives on. I'm not going to say happily ever after. Who knows what the hell goes on there. But I felt that if we would have had one more scene in that movie right before, the credits roll, it would have been the perfect movie again.
Hmm.
Right? So here we go. The movie's ending. She comes back to the village. She's got the medicine. We go back to the woods. We see Adrian Brody's body, in the ditch. He's fallen in a ditch and died. I don't remember if he got impaled or why he died when he went into the hole. But he's in a ditch, surrounded by, the red and the wooks. And then we just pan up, real monster in the woods. Perfect movie. We see a real dude. There's a real monster. Yeah. He's been watching this whole thing transpire. That would have made it, because I would have been like, M. Night, you did it again. Did it again, M. Night. We thought it was fake. We were even shown halfway through the movie the monsters are fake, right?
Yeah.
We're shown. She gets taken into the silo. The father says, listen, they're fake. We've been fucking with you the whole time.
And that's that, right? And so, you know, that took away a lot from the movie. So I thought, he's got something else, right? He's got, and I swear to you, if he would have done that, like added that one scene where we just, you know, monster doesn't have to do anything. All we got to do is pan up from the dead body of the fake monster, real monster in the woods. Perfect movie. What do you think?
Yeah, I would have liked that to see that. For The Village overall, that movie, Lady in the Water and The Happening, and of course, you can throw Last Airbender in there as well. They've all been, I think, well, at least for me, I've heard so much negativity over the years that I had even started avoiding The Village and Lady in the Water after a while. Because first it was because I didn't get around to them, and then it was because I just kept hearing so much bad things about them. But watching them on this marathon that I did, I enjoyed, well, The Village, I think I would enjoy it a lot more on a second viewing, knowing exactly what it is. The first time I watched it, the first half, I was really bored because I was thinking it was a period piece and it was set in the 1800s. The way that they were speaking was really, it took me out of it because I felt like I was watching a play, and it just, you know, it didn't, the dialogue didn't feel natural. But that's just me in current time looking at, okay, this was dialogue from the 1800s. That doesn't feel right to me. That doesn't seem like it's real life. It feels like I'm watching a TV show, I'm watching a movie, I'm watching a play. So that part of it took me out of it. And then I was like, okay, why is Adrian Brody autistic? Like, that didn't make sense to me. And then I was like, why is she blind? Like, I was questioning all of these things. But then actually when the twist happened, and I think you can say that the twist of the people weren't, or the creatures weren't real, and then the twist of they weren't living in that 1800 time period, both of those things, that's when I became interested. Actually, I should say the first time I became interested was 50 minutes into the movie when Adrian Brody stabs Joaquin Phoenix.
What a powerful scene.
Yeah, that, like, I opened my eyes, like, for some reason, the first 50 minutes, I felt it was really slow. I wasn't interested, and I didn't really care what was going on, especially Judy Greer's character. That was the girl who wanted to get married.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen her on Arrested Development, so it's hard for me to take her seriously in a dramatic role because I just keep thinking back to her comedy in Arrested Development. But she kind of lost me for a while. William Hurt seemed like the only person who was acting to me at first. But then, like I said, when I got to that point, I viewed the movie in a different light, and from that point on, I was engrossed in the movie. I actually liked that second half a lot more than I liked the first half, and now I actually went back and rewatched just the first scene over it again, and I said, okay, yeah, I have a whole different understanding and context for it. So I think I liked The Village a lot more than people had told me over the years, like, oh, that movie sucks, yeah. So that was my experience with it, and I was looking online. Apparently, M. Night was he had a great deal of regret the way the film was marketed because he was talking to the producer, Sam Mercer, who's his producer on all of his movies, and he was talking about while they were editing the teaser for Lady in the Water, he wished The Village had been sold as a period romance with a scare only at the end of the trailer.
And, that would be awesome.
Yeah, because he thought that the shift in the main theme of faith from his previous movies to deception resulted in a mixed negative response from the critics. So,
yeah, I could see that. But I'll have to admit to you this, that as you were saying before about the way that they were talking in the movie, as if they were in, you know, the 1700s or whatever, you know, exact time period they were going for at 1800s. We were watching the movie when we were in the theater the first time seeing it. Before, you know, everything was revealed and before I discovered, you know, how much I was going to like the movie, I was actually not liking the movie because I said, you know what? Their accents suck. I said, I don't think they sound – they sounded kind of a little wooden to me and a little not – I mean, I'm only judging it based on other movies and those periods in which I'd seen. So, I mean, you know, it's not a reality check or anything like that. But I'm saying, you know what? It doesn't seem right to me. You know, and then when it all is revealed later, I was like, I go back over the whole movie again, kind of like you do with all of his other movies when you finally, you know, discover something that, you know, makes everything else make more sense. And I was like, it's done on purpose.
Yeah.
They're obviously not in that time. And the people who created the village itself, the adults in the community, were trying to be, you know, trying to reenact a time. So the whole thing does feel like a reenactment. And I was like, that made the movie even more perfect in my mind.
Yeah.
The fact that they really didn't, you know, they weren't perfect in the way they were speaking, and they kind of did feel disjointed, and everything did feel a little out of sorts or out of place. I was like, holy shit. M. Night must have been like, no, you're a little too good period there. Can we take it back to 1990s Brooklyn again a little bit with a little 1800s in it? And I was like, I'm just assuming again, I just make all these assumptions all the time, but I'm assuming that that's what was going on. And I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's made the movie better for me.
Yeah. And Adrian Brody's, kind of like what we were talking about with Signs, Adrian Brody's autism came into play and it affected the story. Whereas with Bryce Dallas Howard's blindness, by the end of it, I still wasn't sure what the whole purpose of that was. And it still doesn't make sense to me how she was able to navigate through the forest being blind and with just a cane. And then not only get through it and get to the medicine, but then to get back. So Dave, yeah. Do you have any insight into that? Because I have no idea.
I honestly don't.
No, I don't.
To be honest with you, I don't. I know that certain scenes were made better because she was blind, mm-hmm. but I don't think the movie was made better because she was blind. And if she wasn't a blind character, I don't think that would have altered the movie too much for me.
Yeah, and
you know, I mean, I think it was kind of a cushy decision to make her blind, and I, you know, maybe other people see more significance because it's, you know, a lot of the movie is based on color, you know, yellow versus red and stuff like that. Yeah. She can't even see the colors; mm-hmm. she's in a field of red, and she doesn't even know it, you know. But by that point, we already know the monster is fake. So what's
that's what I was going to say. You know? I think that they revealed that to the audience too soon. That there was no monsters, or you know, that like I didn't understand why they chose to tell us that, like right in the beginning while she was already like in the woods, and so you're not afraid for her of the creatures. Like I mean, I was afraid she was gonna trip and crack her head open, you know, but I wasn't afraid that monsters were gonna come after her.
Yeah. See, that's why I wrongly assumed that it was because there was going to be a real monster. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, not necessarily that she would be attacked by one. Like I said, I didn't need an attack. You know, all I needed was the knowledge of it for it to, you know, actually raise. I would have raised it another star. You know, in my rating of it, if I was a person who gave stars to things, but I'm not. So.
yeah, and I thought the movie was over at that point when he revealed the twist to her. So that is something that was strange. And it was weird seeing William Hurt in this movie. And then I just reviewed Lost in Space for Geeks of Doom. And he's in that movie as well. And then also, there was another guy. Oh, there was a guy from Mad Men. And I just seen him in another movie that I just watched. Oh, it was Lady in the Water. I just seen him in that. And then he was in Lost in Space. So there was a bunch of...
The one from Resident Evil 2.
Guy. So that guy's appearing everywhere, but it's weird seeing all those different actors in those different parts. But yeah, and then you know, with Bryce Dallas Howard being in The Village, that's what led her to being cast in Lady in the Water. And originally, Kirsten Dunst was going to play her role in The Village. So that was another one that, like with the Joaquin Phoenix thing, if she had gotten that, I wonder if she would have gotten cast in Lady in the Water. So that's another interesting thing.
So what is up next for M. Night? What's the next movie he's going to be directing or writing and directing? Does anybody know?
He's still working on the Night Chronicles because he's working on the story for the second one. And then, like we said, the third one, which was going to be the sequel to Unbreakable, which after watching Unbreakable I don't know how many times I've seen Unbreakable, I want a sequel to that. Instead of the Night Chronicles, where it's going to be a totally different character, but it's going to be the same idea. Uh-huh. I want a sequel with Sam Jackson and Bruce Willis because I know Eve had expressed a great deal of love for Unbreakable to me before, or as we were doing our little marathon. Uh-huh. But I actually lowered my rating when I watched it again because I had it on Netflix as a 4 out of 5. And I lowered my rating because I felt like the
ending.
Yeah, I think with the opposite of The Village, I enjoyed everything up to the ending, but then I felt like the ending negated all of the things that Bruce Willis had gone through, because he had gone through this whole thing about, you know, he had repressed the memories of being unbreakable and all of these different things. And then so by the end of it, everything is revealed. He is unbreakable. He is basically a superhero. But then it just ends. Like, okay.
Yeah.
He went and told the police that Sam Jackson was the villain. And then that was it. And I was like,
I know. I don't like the ending either, truthfully. That's the one thing I don't
like. It felt like a Law and Order episode at the end. Because right at the very end, it's like, oh, you know, we got freeze frame, and then we get to two things that tell us what each guy does afterwards.
And I felt like it was like a one-shot comic book where, or not a one-shot, a first issue of a comic, and then it gets canceled, and you don't see what happens next. Like, what's the rest of the story? Like, okay, he gets put into a criminally insane asylum, and now Bruce Willis has this knowledge that he's unbreakable. Well, now what does he do with that? Like, that's how I felt. Like, I was like, wait a minute, what's going on?
Well, where's the rest of it? That's why it needs a sequel.
Yeah.
It was like an origin story, and it felt to me that it was like they were like Batman and the Joker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So that's why I lowered my score, and I would be much more excited to see a sequel to Unbreakable. I was like, oh, yeah, continue this story that I liked up until that point, and then it just ended.
Right.
This is one thing he's never done. We've never seen M. Night do a sequel, have we? So, I mean, that's more Uncharted than the movie without a twist.
Yeah.
No, but is it possible he's going to do a sequel to Last Airbender? I know he wanted to, right?
Yeah, there hasn't been anything confirmed, but just judging on the box office, I think there will be a sequel to Last Airbender because it's made $282 million right now.
There might be a sequel, but there may not be an M. Night Shyamalan sequel, though.
I don't know. I thought he was going to do all a trilogy.
That would be interesting.
What can M. Night do to get back in everyone's good graces? What could he do so that when people see From the Mind of M. Night Shyamalan, they don't laugh?
That's a good question.
Right?
Yeah.
I think there's a whole think tank full of people asking that question right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because even if he does, let's say his next movie, it's a well-received movie critically and with audiences, is one good movie enough to get him back? Because it feels like most people that I talk to, they want him to succeed, and they have a lot of good grace built up for him, but they're just constantly disappointed with his recent movies, but they just like, okay, next one, he'll be back, he'll be back. But right. Then he just keeps on.
Okay, now we kind of agreed that started with The Happening. Do you think it started earlier? Do you think it was Lady in the Water or something else?
See, for me, like I said, the things that I was hearing started with The Village, and then it went to Lady in the Water, where everyone was like, oh yeah, that movie sucks. Then was The Happening, that movie sucks, and then Last Airbender, there was so much backlash against that one. So I would say, even going back to The Village, even though I don't agree with it, like I said, The Village is one of my favorite movies of his, but I don't know what it would take to bring him back. I forgot to mention, I was still with the things that persist throughout all the M. Night movies. I had a couple more things that I didn't get a chance to say. The color red actually being bad goes through. The Village is really where it, like, you know, personifies, but
it started in this first movie.
Sixth
Sense. Yeah.
That one, every time there was red, there was something bad happening. So that I noticed persists through a lot of his movies, and you see red even going to Last Airbender, where the Fire Nation is a whole group of people and they're the villains of the movie and their color is red. So that it's something that persists throughout all of his movies. And as we talked about, he puts himself in all of his movies, except for The Happening, which was just his voice. But yeah,
he still that counts though, doesn't it?
Well, yeah.
But it's not like in Lady in the Water, he made himself a big character movie. I mean,
he was good in it though. I mean, I thought he was good.
I was going to say, I think his acting is improved and. Yeah,
I didn't think he was that good in Signs. I got to be honest.
Oh no, I thought it was terrible in Signs, and then in The Village, it just seemed so out of place.
I don't
like it. It you know what? Like thought, a cameo, and it
well, the village. That was more like something Alfred Hitchcock would do, though. Mm. Like, you know, Alfred Hitchcock would be seen in like mirrors passing by.
Oh,
or,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he would just be a, he would be a customer who came in and then walked out. Like, that's kind of what he did in the village, which I thought was cool. You know, he was just he really wasn't seen. He was only reflected. So that's kind of
But it was like the way he was talking. It was like it just didn't. I don't know. It just didn't make sense for that scene. Yeah. I
thought they focused on him in the reflection way too long. They're like, see, there he is.
Yes.
Yep. Remember, we were like, oh, got to get in there.
Yeah.
I agree with you there.
Another thing I noticed that persists throughout all of his movies, he loves working with child actors. And even, I don't think he's ever, like, Haley Joel Osment in The Sixth Sense, I don't think he will ever find another child actor. Like, especially when you go to Unbreakable right after that, and the kid in Unbreakable, he may be okay for a child actor, but when I compared him to Haley Joel Osment, I was like, this kid is on another level. Like, I thought, I didn't even think of him as a child. I thought of him as just an actor, and I was looking on the special features. That's how Bruce Willis treated him. That's how M. Night treated him. Everybody, they just treated him like he was an actor and not a child actor. And so he got nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and well deserved. I thought he was.
Oh, yeah.
He gave the performance of his life there, and I don't think he's ever. Even Haley Joel Osment himself, I don't think is. Even though I love him in AI, I don't think he's ever had a performance like he had in Sixth Sense.
No.
But yeah, he loves working with kids, and there's a couple camera tricks that he likes to do. I noticed he'll have like a lot of fisheye lenses, and then he'll do this panning thing where he'll go back and forth between the two, and there's that. If you're looking for an example.
Oh, yeah, like he did in Unbreakable.
Yeah, Unbreakable,
right,
between the chair seats. Like, he goes back and forth. Like, he does that a lot, the panning thing. So that's some
of
the.
He also does the one take, right?
Oh, where yeah.
Big scene, all in one take.
Really long takes, yeah. So he was talking about that on the special features as well. And also watching the special features. Now, this isn't something that persists throughout his movies, but watching the special features, I really. And I've noticed this before, but it really just came to a head for me on this one. He is a really charismatic guy when he talks in interviews, and I really like him as a person. And that's why when some of his movies have been not doing as well critically lately, and you know, with the fan reaction, I've been one of those people who have said, okay, he can bounce back from this, he'll be back, because he seems like a really nice guy, and he seems like he loves what he does. He loves the art and the craft of filmmaking, and he just seems like somebody I'd want to hang out with, I guess. That's kind of the way that I feel.
Well,
about.
I mean, I hope he bounces back, and I hope he has a really long, successful career, because I feel like he gave us so much that we all liked and appreciated, and it would be really terrible if it was just like, well, you know, he had his one-hit wonder with Sixth Sense, and, you know, everything else was, like, downhill from there, and, you know, that's it. I mean, he obviously is a talented writer and director, and I do want to see more from him, and I want it to be good. I want it to be worth my time.
My idea for him is, and I know this is probably goes against what the Directors Guild will allow, but he's got to make a movie under a pen name, and it's got to be awesome. It's got to be Sixth Sense quality. Put it out there, and you know, after it does awesomely, be like, yeah, I did that. It was actually I'm not, you got the twist this time.
That's the twist.
The twist is I directed.
I'll
tell you what, if he did that, he would be my hero. You know, like, what's that, a movie you know, directed by, you know, what is that fake name they use for, you know, Alan Smithy, right? Yeah. That's the one to use, right? He's got to put out a movie under directed by Alan Smithy, and it's got to be fucking awesome. Right, and then there you go. Like, and then like after 6 months, when the DVD's coming out, some stupid shit like that. The DVD doesn't have Alan Smithy's name; it has M. Night Shyamalan, and he comes out and he does a press conference, be like, "Yeah, bitches, I fucking tricked you
all." And he's got the eyes of the devil, right? Like in Devil.
Yeah, right. He comes out all special affected out, right? Yeah. Just does drool with blood or something.
I want to know. Right, well, I wanted to ask both of you. Are you going to rent The Last Airbender? It comes out November 16th on DVD and Blu-ray. Are you interested in seeing The Last Airbender?
No.
Not really.
Not even slightly.
But not even so much because of him. Because, I'm not so sure that You know, I feel like when a movie bombs, they immediately blame the director. They're like, oh, yeah, he did a bad job. And it's like, maybe he didn't do a bad job. Like, maybe, you know, maybe he just got stuck with whatever. Like, people were complaining about the 3D. So it's like, you know, maybe that put people off because the 3D was so terrible. And then the acting wasn't that great. And, you know, I don't know. Is that his fault or the actor's fault? Is he just working with what he has or... I don't know, but so I don't totally blame him if the movie is bad, but I just don't seem to really have a big interest in seeing it.
No, I just don't want to see it because I'm not up on the Airbender series yet, and I would rather watch all of the anime or read all of the books or do, you know, I'd rather get it from the source before I saw what everyone said was a mediocre adaptation. You know, right. So yeah. that's where I'm at with that, and you know that's a commitment. I still haven't even watched Lost yet, so I've got a whole lot to do.
Yeah, I would highly recommend if anyone out there is listening. I've watched the entire series, and I will say Avatar: The Last Airbender is my favorite animated series of all time. Just it works on a child level, it works on an adult level, just like a Pixar movie. You can take so much away from the mythology of it, and it's an amazing series, and it's really. I'm looking at the special features now on the Blu-ray. I might check this out just for the special features alone because there's a lot of stuff about Avatar, the last Airbender series. So, and you know what? That was another thing. I was thinking about this on the DVDs for The Last Airbender. M. Night appears on there and he's talking about how much he loves the series, how much he really wants to do the movie right. And so that gave me a lot of confidence before I saw the movie. Unfortunately, he did not, you know, fall through on that, but that was interesting to me that he had so much love for the source material, and it's on Netflix Watch Instant, so I highly recommend everybody check out. It's only 3 seasons, very very good show.
Cool, yeah. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our M. Night Shyamalan discussion. I think all of us can agree that we hope that he bounces back and people won't laugh at him too much longer.
Yep.
And that we'll get a lot of good movies out of him in the future.
Yay!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and I also forgot, before we wrap up, he did write the screenplay for Stuart Little, so that's another thing that he did in his career. Little M. Night.
But not Stuart Little Part 2, right?
No. Little M. Night trivia for you.
So that's where the whole mouse twist came into.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wasn't actually a mouse. He was a rat.
Yeah.
Speaking of twists, this episode has one, I believe. Is that correct, Justin?
Well, you tell me. I'm waiting for it.
The twist of the big reveal, get ready, guys, is that Dave 3 is actually not on this episode.
Ah! All right.
It was actually the devil. The devil.
Now they're going to be expecting a twist every episode. We're never going to be able to live up to that.
Exactly.
I see Dave people.
The devil! Okay, now that I've scared myself again, Justin, why don't you tell the lovely listeners where they can find us on the internet?
Everything is Flicks with an X. They can email us, flicksofdoom@gmail.com. They can tweet us, twitter.com/flicksofdoom. Or they can head over to the wonderful, twisty website, geeksofdoom.com. And remember, Eve, eat your vegetables, or your vegetables will eat you.
Now all I see is red. These thoughts of hate killing me dead. I'm dancing on the edge. Okay, Jasmine, got it off. Wait, hang on. Don't record it.
No, wait, don't.
Wait. I have to. What did I say I was going to say? Justin doesn't like my segues, so. I don't know what it was. You say something, Justin.